Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our life to this sport. We give, we do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're moving, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
College football fans, the College Ball Show is back, and I think I'm good to go. Wow, that was really weird. The whole thing just stopped for a second, but it looks like it's good. Anyway, like I was saying, college football fans, the College Ball Show is back. I'm Chris, he's Marshall, and we're here to discuss, banter, predict, and sometimes just yell at each other pertaining to college football. Of course, week one kicked off last week, had some interesting games. I mean, we really did, considering, you know, of course it's a week one. Didn't get a bunch of even really one major upset. We almost did, though. The Big Ten definitely came out of the gates struggling a little bit, especially Michigan State and Penn State. Because if you look at the opposition there. So, kind of an interesting week. Some of these tight games we had, like, matchup-wise, you know, we definitely had a lot of solid ranked versus ranked, just quality program. Maybe not, you know, top-tier program, but we definitely had some matchups on paper, and sometimes you get those matchups and you think, oh man, this is going to be great, this is going to be awesome, and then it's a blowout or something like that. Now, that wasn't necessarily the case, but like I said, we actually got a couple of surprises, or almost huge surprises. Appalachian State comes to mind. So we're definitely going to talk all about week one, break down some key stats. There's always some stats there that I like to bring up, especially if they're, you know, a little bit more important or whatever, or telling. So, yeah, we'll definitely break down all the action from week one. Then we got to get into week two. Now, I think there's only one ranked versus ranked. I think it's number 10, Stanford, against number 17, USC. And that's a big game in the Pac-12. It really is. And we also got a variety of big games last week, not just non-conference. We talked about, you know, having them actually be really good conference games this early in the season. So start with recap, then we'll get into breaking down all the marquee matchups and games kind of flying under the radar. Of course, we'll have the crafty pick, which, wow. That's probably the worst outcome from a crafty pick of the week. And if you don't know what the crafty vet pick of the week is, basically my co-host Marshall, who I'm going to bring in here in just a moment, he picks two of the worst teams out there, as you know, on paper. And I just blindly kind of go into it, not knowing what matchups he's going to pick, and just, like I said, go for it. So it's kind of a fun thing. But like I said, this last pick, wow, was I off. But, you know, it's the first week. We're picking shitty teams, and it's the first week, so that kind of is a recipe, you know, for destruction, I guess you could say. If this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, we are here. We started last week. We're here all the way to the national title game for college football. It's called the College Ball Show because we go from college football mid-January, then we change to college basketball. We take that all the way to the NCAA championship in April. Then we switch to the NBA playoffs. We figure, hey, if you like college hoops, you're probably going to like the NBA playoffs. Maybe you don't like the full season, the long, long season. And that goes all the way to the finals, June, July. But that's nowhere near where we're talking right now. We are here in college football right now. And like I said, if you haven't heard it, this show before the College Ball Show, it's under the umbrella of the Ropadope Radio Podcast. We stream it live right here, blogtalkradio.com/Ropadope Radio. It streams live. The number to call in, 646-381-4990. Streams live, archives, it's the headquarters, but it's also available under the Ropadope Radio Podcast on, you know, iTunes, Player FM, Spreaker, Stitcher, Blog Talk is starting to get into Spotify now. We're also available as part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, and that's available across the board, including iHeartRadio and Spotify. You can stream the show there, the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. Check out thegruelingtruth.net. They got a great sponsor over there, mybookie.ag. That's mybookie.ag. Go read an article I write for college football, college basketball when it comes, and NBA, and also boxing. So it's football, basketball, boxing, baseball, and everything in between. Check out an article on thegruelingtruth.net. Maybe check out a podcast. And hey, while you're at it, place a bet right there. I'll link you. It will link you right to mybookie.ag. So we almost had some upsets, and we're going to get into that. Some games, like the Stanford-San Diego State game, was actually closer than the 31-10 score kind of lends it to be. And ranked versus ranked, we also had some just, you know, butt whoopings. Right? There's no doubt about it. In fact, Florida, you know, the state of Florida, Florida State and Miami, both got handled on national TV. LSU handled Miami. Virginia Tech handled Florida State. We did have some upsets in the top 25. Texas, as far as not, you know, top 25 against top 25, Texas, for the second year in a row, first week out, 34-29, they get the job done. That was a tad bit of a surprise, no doubt about it. Maryland's obviously had their own issues with the head coach, I guess, being too hard on people. I don't know all the details. I'm not going to act like I do. But Appalachian State almost knocked off Penn State, 45-38 in overtime. And like I said, Michigan State was struggling with Utah State. And that is the game I said that they're going to fit under that spread. Well, they damn near won the game. 38-31, they did finally get over the hump. And we're just going to kind of work through some of these games. I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host Marshall now to kind of break down some of this stuff here. What's going on, Marshall? How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. Yeah, I got some work done, so I just get to come home, talk some football with you, watch some baseball, and then call it a day. But like you said, it was a good opening week one. There was a lot of potential upsets, a lot of good games. It was one of those, it's week one, nothing happened. I think that Nick Saban storyline got a little overblown, and I know that was kind of catching more news than I thought it maybe should have. But overall, it was a fun weekend, but I – ton of good games, man. Your Gophers are 1-0. Missouri's 1-0. USC's 1-0. So all of our teams are, you know, 1-0. So that's a nice thing as well.
So you got two teams and I got one. You said all of your teams. Well, not all of my teams are 1-0, buddy.
Your Miami
Hurricanes, just so you know,
aren't 1-0. So.
No, they are nowhere near 1-0. But let's start with some of these higher-ranked teams squaring off.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is Auburn and Washington, and also Michigan and Notre Dame. Let's start with Washington and Auburn.
Sure.
A tightly contested one. here. I mean, this was – it had shades of ugliness, the early season ugliness. Sometimes you see that too. You know, these people, they're just – this is their first game, you know. A lot of these players are just kind of trying to get some of the rust off or, you know, break it in new players in general. So we'll start with Auburn and Washington. And I thought both defenses played pretty damn well. Auburn, obviously, when you got, you know, Browning definitely a higher profile guy than, you know, who Auburn has. Solid dude, but this guy's been there for quite some time, and they basically contained him. Now, I know he had 300 yards, but he only had 18 completions. They ran the ball pretty well. I felt like, Marshall, they were in control of the game, just watching it and looking at how it's playing out. Of course, they were never like way up in the score. I mean, it was 21-16, so there wasn't a whole lot of scoring in general. Something stood out to me, though, 5 of 14 on third down, so third down efficiency, not so good. Both teams were highly penalized. In fact, I noticed this weekend in general, there was a ton of penalties. Once again, kind of makes sense, you know, especially in these high-profile games, but both of them in double digits. For penalties, Washington with 10 for 95 and Auburn 12 for 111. But, yeah, I mean, it came down to a couple of plays, really third down and two turnovers, a fumble loss, interception, breakdowns in the red zone. How'd you come away feeling about this game? Auburn ended up getting an ugly win, which at the end of the day really doesn't matter how you get it.
Yeah, I picked Auburn. I bet them. So that was a profitable game. Michigan was a different story. But I think, first off, I got to give Washington credit. I'll probably not use moral victory much on the show, but, I mean, that wasn't a neutral site game. That was a freaking, like, you know, it almost felt like kind of like an SEC title game. That crowd was nuts. It was like 90% Auburn. And I know they agreed to it, fair is fair, but to actually turn the game neutral site, it really isn't even a true statement. I mean, you could maybe hear Washington fans making noise, and they were. I think they said they sold like 7,000 Washington tickets for the game, and the other like 60,000-70,000 people were Auburn. So you did lose a game, but you lost a game against another high-ranked team like you in a crazy environment. And I actually thought I was pretty nervous during the third and fourth quarters because I thought Auburn's offense was dead, and Washington was going to come away with a win. Auburn finally pieced together one good drive, and they actually called a timeout, I believe, on a third down. They threw a nice pass from their own zone to complete a first, and they drove down and scored in that to take the lead. But, man, Auburn's offense in the red zone was just garbage. I know it's first game of the year, but they really should have won the game by at least another touchdown or so. I thought Washington's defense, despite the start of the game where they were probably a little nervous, played really well. That Auburn had all the reasons in the world to maybe get at least a little bit of, like, breakaway room from them. And you can say Auburn's defense played good, too. But, again, with the home crowd, that definitely helped. But I just thought Washington played really damn good. Auburn did just enough. Their offense went from being great to start, being dead, finally had one good drive, and then they held on at the end. But hell of a fun game to watch for week one, man. It's so many damn things going against Washington. I thought they played about as good as you could, Chris, for a team that took an L on a week one.
Yeah, I mean, there were some key turnovers and missed field goals, though. But
sure,
both sides missed field goals, though, I should say that. I'm not sure they played as good as you could, but yeah, I hear you. It did feel like I agree. I mean, after the first quarter, and once they kind of settled down a bit, it felt like Washington was going to win the game. It really did. Now, wait a second. Are you sure you picked Washington? Or, I mean, Auburn? I'm almost positive on the show you picked Washington.
Oh, no, I'm just saying strictly from, like, a gambling. I bet on them.
Right. Okay, I got you.
I think I did pick, yeah. But when it came down to when I saw the crowd, I was like, oh, my God, this is – this is a home game.
Yeah.
I was like, Auburn's going to win, and they barely did.
This was way more of a home game for Georgia, that, or not for Georgia, but for Auburn, than even the LSU game. And you could tell that
was
a home game for them to an extent, but not, you know, it was nowhere near, because at least they had a good chunk of the stadium, Miami, whereas,
sure.
You're right, it was, you could tell on defense, you know, the home team, who the noise and all that, you could see it was an advantage, but it wasn't anywhere near like what you said, like that, and that makes sense. They're all the way up top on the, you know, on the West Coast.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, that does kind of line up. And they just started kind of getting their program back in shape, too, if you think about it, the last handful of years. So, good game, though. You know, well played, hard nose. I think that if they clean up some things, the turnovers, obviously, and like you said, the red zone on Auburn was – neither team was great in the red zone, but especially – Auburn, you could see there were some issues there, but a big win. Auburn needed it. You know, it's funny because we talked about last week, well, who needs it more? And the Pac-12 needs it more, you know, and so Washington needed it. But when you look at the circumstances, this isn't really going to hurt them. If they win out, it won't hurt them that much. And so you can kind of make the argument, as funny as it sounds, that it actually – the game meant more to Auburn just based off their freaking schedule. You know what I mean? So you're like, huh. I mean, Jesus. You know, so it was a little bit more important, equally important, I suppose. But at the end of the day, I'd say it was, you know, the Tigers needed it more. Let's move on to Michigan-Notre Dame. So we got, Marshall, we got the old Miss Shea Patterson. We got the transfer. Now, finally, you know, Harbaugh can get a QB. And the offense is going to look at, I know Notre Dame's defense, you know, under this coordinator, improved a lot from the year prior, 2 years ago. This last year they improved, and it really looks pretty damn good. But if it's not Patterson not completing something, throwing a pick with the fumble, it's the offensive line allowing him to get hit. It just, for whatever reason, I'm not going to blame it all on the quarterback, because it's not like he had just a horrendous game, but for whatever reason, Marshall, they just can't get things going in Ann Arbor. They just can't do it. I know the game wasn't there, but it's not, I mean, Wimbush had a good quality game for him. He ran the ball. He led the team in running, but it was only 59 yards. They ran 132 for 2.8, so it's not like they had this unbelievable clip. The defense played really well, had a bunch of tackles for loss, and like I said, those turnovers were key. I mean, man, I'm going to let you kind of talk about this, and I'm going to bring up some stats. And it won't be on the power index yet. That'll be later in the show. I know you love that segment. But I'm going to bring up some Michigan stats that are just, you know, I brought out the stats last week in, you know, to be able to side with Harbaugh a little bit, like give this guy some time. Remember, it was two miracle plays. Otherwise, they would have been in a lot better shape at the end of the season. Well, we got to start looking at some of this too. What'd you think of this game, man? Notre Dame got a lead and sat on it, really.
Yeah, for all the hype you've heard about Michigan's defense, it was a little surprise they came out like they did. I didn't expect that Notre Dame would have two touchdowns, like, in 7 minutes. Like, I was driving to go out and eat dinner with my dad, and we get to a new place, and it'd been maybe about 20 minutes, and it's like Michigan's down 14-0. Like, oh, my God. And from that point on, it's like you said, Michigan was, like, just pulling teeth, just trying to get, like, offensive flow to their game. And I saw this happen in other games this week, Chris, but it was teams with new coaches who are developing a new system. I mean, I guess you have a new quarterback, but, like, Harbaugh's been there, like, it's tough to see such a talented team have such struggles on offense, because Notre Dame's defense, I don't think, is, like, super elite. So it would be, I don't know, incredibly frustrating as a Michigan fan to lose that game, because that, unlike Auburn and Washington, that does kind of, that is a pretty good blow to their, you know, chances of looking towards the Final Four, because that is a tough loss that many people didn't quite expect them to take. And, yeah, it's just the offense, there's no rhythm. The one touchdown they get before halftime on that kick return is all sorts of momentum. You're thinking, okay, they're only down 11. They get the ball to start the second half. And they even had a couple of good field possessions in the second half, but just nothing. So I guess you have to give Shea Patterson a little bit of a break because it's his first game in Michigan, but that break is the short leash because, again, they're expected to be national title contenders. So you really can't afford to have another game like this against a top team or even a middle-tier team because you're going to lose again. And with two losses, the year's already over. So maybe the pressure on him is a little unfair, but You need to figure out something fast because that offense, it was just sad. And Chris, if you just get a little bit better, that defense will carry you because they're probably not going to give up 14 points that quick like they do for the rest of the year. Or it'll be more difficult. But and you got to redo something over there on offense because all of that is tough and painful to watch. And we're not even Michigan fans.
I don't particularly like Michigan. Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't have any kind of fanship, you know, necessary for him. But if you look at this, so, and this is obviously Harbaugh's only been there a short time, you know, in the long run. But Michigan in general on the road against a top 25 AP poll, right? 0-17 on the road facing a top 25 AP team since 2016. And not only are they losing, I mean, they're getting their ass kicked in some of this time, too. If you look at, it's a 16-point differential. They're averaging 15 points. Like, that's crazy. And this was that stat I just read was the last 10 seasons against the AP-ranked opponent. 0-14 on the road and just getting their butts kicked, really. Yeah, man, not a great way to start the season, obviously. Long season ahead, no doubt about it. It is, although it's not really a non-conference, it is a non-conference, you know what I mean? Because they don't have a conference, but technically they have to play, Notre Dame has to play five ACC teams, and they usually play, like, a couple other Big Ten teams, too. So, but yeah, man, wow. That not a great start there. Not a great start at all. They definitely got to clean up some stuff. But, I mean, the road, you know, it's all there for them, no doubt about it. We can't sit there and count them out all the way just yet by any stretch. We know that. But, wow, that's an interesting way to start off things this year. And the pressure, like you said, is only going to intensify. I mean, there's just no way around it. It's only going to go up. Okay, sorry about that. I just had some kind of weird thing, but it's fine now, so we're good. A couple other high-profile games that I want to kind of breeze by, actually. I don't really want to talk too much detail, but unfortunately I'm going to have to talk about it. Number 22 now, and rightfully so, Miami went down against LSU. And also last night, Virginia pretty much handled Florida State pretty strongly. If you look at the Miami game, it's funny. I mean, it kind of sounds like although Washington played a lot better and overall as a team, but some of the things that I pointed out, you know, really come to mind. 6-16 on third down, they were a really bad third down team last year on offense. They just were. And they didn't improve this one. That's for sure. They actually had – well, one of the fourth downs was late, I suppose, but they were 1-3 on fourth down too. But penalties, you know, they almost doubled them. Miami did over LSU. And the turnovers. You know, here's the thing, Marshall. You can't get down in the first half to LSU. And, in fact, I kind of want to parallel some of these games from last night, too. Just like Virginia Tech, you cannot get down to them at half. Listen to this. If they're up by 14 at half in the last 15 seasons, they're 49-1. You know what I mean? Like, you just don't get down. They want you. And LSU, you could even say, is even more that way, because what do? Marshall, they run the ball and they play great defense. That's what they're known for. Even when they're 9-3 and you look and you go, oh, that's not the same LSU team, you know they're still going to deliver that. And what they do in the first half, they got down early, and then they caught, you know, they had the turnover, and then they had the pick six. And once the pick six happened, it really felt like the Notre Dame game in reverse last year, where Miami just got on them and it was over. And once they got on them, you know, once you're up to 20-3 or something and it's LSU, I'm not saying you can't come back, but I pretty much, had I been around a computer, I would have put a bunch of money in the second half because it was bad. It was bad. So, and you just allowed them to run. One running back basically had about 150 yards or something, 125 yards. He ran the ball pretty well. Couple of points here real quick. Rozier, you know, same quarterback from last year who, you know, wasn't consistent throughout. You know, we know in the second half you can play really well, dude. We got that. How about the first half, though? Can you come out and be consistent? And if you look at, you know, throwing pick sixes, throwing dumb interceptions, and really just overthrowing. So you're either missing the guy because you didn't see him, because you only go one or two, and then you want to run or something, or you just overthrow. I mean, there's about three catches on Sunday night that the wide receiver made a really good catch. If it wasn't for that, though, that wouldn't have been the completion. And he overthrew a handful of tight ends wide open. It's just at some point they're going to have to bench Rozier when he does this. Now, they have about a month until they play another quality opponent. Lucky for them, you know, to get some things figured out. But, yeah, once you get down on LSU, Marshall, it's never a good thing. And it just – it compiled, man, and it was over. Sure, you can see a couple of good passes here and there. And that's the thing about Rozier. He'll make a pass where you're like, dude, how'd you make that pass? And then he'll fall right up by overthrowing. You know, he's got that – he was a baseball player, man, even at Miami, and – he's got that, he believes in his arm a little too much, you know, and he doesn't feel like he has to have the right foot position when he throws, you know. And, you know, if you're Brett Favre, you can get away with it. But you're not Brett Favre, dude, and you're not getting away with it.
Yeah, that game, I kind of felt like at the start of the game, I thought that Miami was going to win about the first quarter because they were having pretty good drives. They did have a tough field goal that was missed, but LSU's offense was kind of just slumming around, and Miami's offense looked pretty good. And then the tide kind of turned probably with a little bit left in the first quarter, and after that it was just done. I think it was about midway through the third quarter that night where I heard the announcer say that Miami had more penalties than first downs, and they started off like 0 for 9 or 0 for 10 on third down. So, again, talking about an offense that has no rhythm. Now, with Michigan, you had a guy who was a new quarterback. Miami truly didn't have an excuse. This is a guy who was their quarterback last year. They have the same coach. I can't rattle off and say their whole offensive line, all the receivers are all the same, because, you know, I don't know the team.
They don't have
an excuse.
There wasn't
a reason to kind of come out flat like it was. And you had LSU, who had a very talented defense, but they did have some young players, so maybe you could find a way to expose, you know, a corner or two that were, you know, freshmen. After that first quarter, the rhythm just disappeared. And LSU, I got to give that their running back credit. That dude, he looks to be about 5'10". I mean, their running backs aren't big, but for a guy that looked to be under 6 foot, man, did he run like he weighed about 250. I mean, that LSU,
yeah,
between the tackles or up the middle, those running backs were some tough freaking kids, because that dude was just plowing through people. So, again, you know, turnovers, field goals, I think it's fair to say, I mean, every college football game you watch, you're probably going to see missed field goals. Now, as a fan, it kills you. But it is incredibly hard to find a great, reliable kicker, unfortunately. Just offense just didn't get into a rhythm again. So, defensively, Miami probably just got a little tired, you know. And there is something for – football is a game of emotion, Chris. And when your offense is just, you know, continues to struggle, the defensive guys are like, well, what more can we do? You know, you kind of become split in two teams, you know, obviously because there's not many guys that play both ways in college football ever. So, you just kind of get that, oh, my gosh, here we go again, routine in your head and the defense. And also you just get physically tired and worn out too. I'm sure the Miami Hurricane defense probably needed a break. Those guys were trying to feel like they had to make a play nonstop, and it didn't quite work out. So, and LSU, just to give them credit, all you ever hear, I mean, besides me and I'm sure maybe a handful of LSU fans, is that Orgeron's a bad coach. He's a bad coach. He doesn't know what he's doing. They're dying to put him on the hot seat every game. And this is a game that I don't think a lot of people expected them to win. And the guy gets it done. So, again, I'm not saying he's a Nick Saban or anything crazy, but he's continuously lit up as he's not a good coach by LSU fans, by media, by anyone. And last year was a pretty good year for, I would say, from his standards. And this year he starts off the year with another win. So maybe the tide will start to turn slowly on Orgeron, or maybe they'll just continue to prove wrong. Maybe this was their highlight win of the year. But I wonder if people are going to maybe start to give this guy a little bit of credit or a temporary break and say that he might be doing something. Or maybe it's too late, I guess, to change the mindset of many people, Chris. But I'd say a good win for him, for a guy that most people continuously doubt. And, you know, everyone kind of compared him to, well, LSU couldn't get Tom Herman. Well, Tom Herman's the guy who kind of lost 2 years running to Maryland. So you want to say that a guy who can't beat Maryland football with Texas talent is a superior coach to Orgeron? I don't know. I think that'd be a kind of a tough argument to spin.
Yeah, no, for sure. That running back, Nick Brossette, I think, or Brossette, something like that.
Okay.
22 touchdowns, 22 and .125. And, yeah,
Jesus.
Even third down. Miami held them to 3 of 16 on third down. So it wasn't like, you know, the defense played, I thought, good enough to at least be in the damn game. They did lose a corner early from, a hit to the helmet, like aiming at the helmet and whatnot. That didn't necessarily help on some of those. When they go up the gut and then kind of bounce it outside, you're right, man. That dude was running really hard. He was really running hard. And basically, last night, Virginia Tech got a 10-0 lead and just kept adding to it minorly. Jackson had two touchdowns, played pretty good. He was, a redshirt freshman last year. So that, you know, it's nice to have a young quarterback coming back in the system. And 24-3, and that's with Virginia Tech actually – like not having a ton of their defense either graduated or injury or suspension. So that kind of was a little bit of a surprise. I thought Florida State would win, especially at home. But it kind of looked like more of the same, that it'll be interesting to see if they can get that offense going this year. But 24-3, I don't know if you want to add to that or you know, if something came, you know, that you saw that you want to talk about, or maybe we can start hitting up some of these second layers of games before we start to look at next week.
The only thing I'd say about that, again, is kind of, I guess, my common theme is just rhythm. You could tell that Florida State legit was like trying to run a whole new offense. I mean, their first series of the game was garbage. I mean, there was no flow. You could tell the play calling wasn't that smooth. The players were kind of getting used to new roles. Last night, when I believe they were down 14 and they were trying to cut it down to 7, the play before, the running back, why am I drawing a blank on his name? The kid's a stud. Not Dixon. Florida
Aikens?
State, incredible running back. He breaks off like an 80-yard run. And it's just a marvelous run, but to Virginia Tech's credit, safety tracks him down. They're on the 5-yard line, and they call a timeout, and they're like, well, what's our brilliant play call? Well, we're going to run a shotgun with two running backs with our quarterback, who is the running back, and let him kind of do a read option. It's like, what? I know that the red zone, red zone struggles with a hole. Yeah, Cam Akers, there we go. That kid's a beast. I love watching him play football. He's good. He was good last year. But, yeah, their big play is to do put him in a shotgun with two guys next to him, kind of do a read option, and they fumble it. And, I mean, if the game wasn't done already, that was kind of the last straw. So just, I know it's a new system, just like Brian Kelly this week and everything. But, man, that was a tough one, Chris. I don't know. They really had no flow at all. We've talked about Michigan and Miami, but, I mean, this was like the lowest letter grade to give of Florida State, because you can see that they have incredibly talented players. They threw, and this one I really, but they threw a quick out to a freshman wide receiver. And this kid they talk about is just a number one of their best recruits. This kid just cocked the ball and just made about four people miss and juked across the whole field and got about 40 yards. So they have the talented players on their team, but they really need to find a way to work in the new offense. But that's hard. You know, we've kind of been ripping offenses this game, but when you are doing a new system, as a coach, I know you want to win and expect your players to do well, but realistically as a head coach, I don't know what kind of expectations you do have for the first couple of games, because there are completely switching up. So obviously you want your players to succeed and win, but can you really expect them to have it down pat right away? Probably not. So maybe from that standpoint, Florida State maybe shouldn't have been a touchdown favorite or, you know, picked by many to win. You know, it's kind of tough. You can't just flip your switch and have a new offense rolling, you know, from day one, Chris.
Yeah, especially when it is different, like you said. And so do you even have the right people in the right role, or do you got to recruit them over the next couple of years? So, yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point. And that was kind of a nutshell of the whole game. You know, that player from Virginia Tech running that guy down at the five and then able to keep him out of the end zone. You know, that was – they're even off the board in general. So, yeah, that was a big – you got to love that hustle, you know, because once in a while
– oh, yeah.
It pays off, you know. And like you mentioned, and I said it earlier, Maryland for the second year in a row beats Texas 34-29. And Texas just can't get out of its own way at the beginning of seasons, man. If they could just start in October, they'd be a lot better program right now. They cannot get over the hump, and there's so much pressure that the fan base is so sick of losing, and especially tight games. It's just a hell of a way to start. Man,
yeah,
really negative for them. That I really want to see how that plays out, because as we know, Charlie Strong had a hell of a time there with the fan base, and you know, hey, they're Texas, dude. You know what I mean? So they play a lot of football. They expect the football to be good, to great, I should say. A really tight game. Utah State almost pulls ahead of Michigan State late in the fourth quarter. Doesn't get the job done, though. 38-31, Michigan State ends up winning it. Close game. Very close game. And then also Appalachian State damn near pulled off the upset like they did years ago. In fact, I remember I think it was like mid-year that you switched classes when we were in school. And so it had to been that summer, probably 07 then. It's probably 07 summer. I remember, you know, talking to you about Appalachian State beat Michigan.
Sure.
I was out on my boat with my family, saw that you had called. I hadn't heard the news. You told me, I was like, oh my God, are you serious? Well, it almost happened again. And Penn State, you know, we talked about last week how on offense, they still have something there. They obviously don't have, you know, the guy. The multi-purpose guy that, you know, Barkley, but they also lost 9 starters and a bunch of coaches too. Cause you know, this last 2 years, they've had a nice little run, which generally means you're going to start recycling coaches. If you do really well as a coordinator, guess what? Someone's going to want you as a head coach, or even maybe, you know, a higher profile offensive job, whatever. So that's going to be interesting to see these next couple of weeks for Penn State. They got to play Pitt, rivalry game. You never know how that works out. A couple of themes, though, I want to talk about, Marshall, is two quarterback system. And obviously we knew in a sense that was going to be the case with Alabama. Of course, Jalen Hurts is a very experienced, you know, player. Clearly, the guy's been in a lot of big games, and he's played well in a lot of big – I mean, he's played great in a couple of these big games. But now Clemson has entered the fold, Marshall, as a two-quarterback system. And go figure, the top two teams on paper this year, and really the last couple of years, if we're honest, you know, like, it's just weird to see that, a two-quarterback system. They're already – they're kind of cornering Kelly Bryant and say, hey, man, you're a running quarterback. We're going to need some more passing out of you. You got to be a little bit more dual threat. And they have this Lawrence, who's a young quarterback, and, you know, on paper, it looked like he outplayed him. But you also got to remember, you know, Kelly Bryant did start the game. I don't know how long he was going against the ones compared to Lawrence. So you got to play that in the factor, too. But that kind of interests me. Like, what are the odds that you have, in a sense, a two-quarterback system, or where at least two quarterbacks are going to play, even though Alabama's already made their decision and Tua's going to start, the young sophomore, and Bryant, who played last year pretty damn well, he's going to start. But kind of weird that we have two, you know, on the best two teams on paper in the land in the last couple of years. It just kind of throws me off a little bit. But it just shows you they're not afraid to improve. Kind of weird, though, isn't it, Marshall?
Yeah, because normally, I mean, besides maybe the love that Spurrier used to get in Florida for doing it, even it, it's so hard to do.
Yeah, if you had two totally opposite quarterbacks, you know, where one's just a runner and one's just a passer, that at least makes more sense. But
sure,
this is not that.
And I think the reason it becomes an issue after a game or two is because in some games, and I remember seeing this last year, and it would drive me nuts whether I bet on the game or watched it for, you know, because team I cheer for, whatever. And actually, that happened with Wisconsin last year. There'd be drives where Wisconsin would, or maybe 2 years ago, but there'd be drives
2 years
where
ago,
the first, this, yeah, the starting quarterback comes out and does two or three drives and gets a rhythm. Backup comes out, or the other dude comes out, drive kills. Then the other quarterback comes back out who started the game, and he loses rhythm. And it's just kind of a lose-lose, or sometimes like the guy that comes in scores a touchdown, and then he goes to the bench, or there's really not a perfect way to do it. Now, in theory, if as Saban said, you know, Jalen Hurts is going to be a skill package quarterback, sure, that'll work. Now, if he's content with that being his role and he's, you know, and everything, then that'll be successful. But to legit have two quarterbacks battling, you know, you do need some type of unity for rhythm with the team. When you do mix with these guys' emotions, and I mean, athletes want to play and compete. So if you keep going back and forth, you're going to have some type of divide because everyone's human. And I just think there really isn't a perfect way to do it, Chris. So I mean, unless you literally got like a Tebow, who was like the perfect package for like red zone, like, you know, kind of goal zone, end zone type plays.
Chris Leak was the veteran guy who had a better arm, but there was some thing.
Sure.
Yeah. That's totally different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm with you. It's interesting. Now, how long will this play out? Probably not long. Cause like I said, there's so many reasons to end it, but maybe it's a two quarterback competition. If it sticks with the rotation, it's just, I'm not saying it's impossible because these are two of the best coaches in college football, maybe the two best currently, but it's hard to make it to where it works continuously throughout the year without something going awry or the team chemistry or something happening. It's just probably going to be a negative from some aspect.
Yeah, you figure Hurts right about now is like, man, why didn't I freaking transfer? Like, why didn't I transfer?
Sure, absolutely.
I should have seen the writing on the wall. But, you know, when you leave it open like that, and of course he was going to leave the competition open, but how open was it? You know, I don't know. You know, I don't know, man. It's kind of – not to say they didn't give him a fair shake because it was open, but knowing what you know – and the reason, I mean, in the national, here's Hurt. The last 2 years, Jalen Hurts played really good for Alabama. I mean, great, actually, if you think about it. And then you're obviously going to the Young Buck for a reason. So you probably know, well, shit, if you're willing to go in the national title game, it's not like they were getting beat by 30 or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
It was just a change of pace, and it you knew exactly what, you know, what you wanted to do. I don't know. It just seems like he was going to win the job. What were you going to say, though? I think you were going to say something. Maybe not.
I had one quick point. And I kind of thought, like, because I saw this happen on ESPN, like, nonstop on the bottom line when I was off on Labor Day or whatever. And it's like Nick Saban apologized, and I was kind of like, what? Did he, like, swear at the lady? Like, did he, like, you know, I really thought from how the headline sounded that he was, like, said something very rude or, like, derogatory towards females. And I think from his point, obviously, I don't think he meant to offend, I believe it's Maria Taylor. I think she's doing her job and everything, but I think he was just kind of fed up with the question being asked. So when he answered that way, I guess I just thought there was a little bit of an overreaction. I don't think that he was trying to be disrespectful to her. He'd heard the question enough. As a coach, you know, there comes a limit where eventually you're like, oh, my God, we're going to do this again? Like, so.
But he did keep it closed until the starting day, like the before the game. Like, he kept it quiet the whole time, though. So if you do that, if you're the biggest high-profile coach at the biggest high-profile program and you don't – you have two – national championship type quarterbacks and you haven't even named the starter until the game one, you know, the questions are going to come, you know, like he put up
his hands.
Yeah. He's like, oh, Jesus Christ. Well, dude, why in August, why didn't you say it then? You know, you could have deaded this a while ago. So I don't know.
I guess maybe to wrap this up, I think one thing I did hear was he didn't want Jalen Hurts to transfer. So maybe the true coach of him just want to make sure that Hurts would stay there. You know,
yeah, that's
I don't
exactly
know if that's true or not, but.
No, that, I mean,
that,
that's
that was
exactly what it was. That's exactly what it was.
He didn't want him to leave.
That's my opinion. I think so for sure. But then that's selfish, too, because if something happens, then you got a quality quarterback to put in, but you can't put your hands up and, like, oh my God, how are you guys asking me this stuff? Well, dude, you're the one who kept it open. You just closed the damn thing. Now, he's called the starter now. You know, he's already called the starter for next week, so that was smart. Of course, he left it a little open because he said, well, he's a starter, but we're going to play Hurts, you know? So it's like, we're gonna use his skills. That's what he said.
Yeah, it's something. I'm just happy he didn't say something, like, really rude. I mean, I guess it kind of blew up, you know? Oh, well.
You go, well, blah, blah, blah. He needs to do that. That's just him, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He'll sit there and ream a media member over, like, we're done. Put the dirt on us. Don't close the casket. We've been done at Alabama. You know, he always says that stuff. And, you know, hey, you got to find motivation.
The Pearl Harbor.
I don't feel bad for him on this one because he's the one who left it open. He's the one who probably misled, you know, Hurts to keep him on there and all that. So. Couple other games, though, from week one before we get into week two, Northwestern and Purdue, a Big Ten game, a conference game, 31-27. Northwestern gets the job done on the road. God, what was the other game that I was watching that was really, really good? You know, Colorado State was a 7-point favorite. I think I read it wrong or something, but 45-13, they just whooped on them. But there was another What was it? There was another game I wanted to talk about that was a pretty damn good game. I'm actually scrolling through.
As you're thinking,
that Carolina Cal game was pretty good, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, just to add, Herm Edwards, I mean, everyone thinks he's kind of crazy. At least his first game went good. I think they won like 45-7. So Arizona State beat University of Texas San Antonio. They stomped them. And his fellow new coach in Arizona, Kevin Sumlin, and I didn't watch
That's
this game, but I was surprised to hear.
That was a good game. BYU, Arizona.
BYU beat Arizona. Yeah, the Michael Vick of college football, the Khalil Tate, maybe this whole thing. Now, I didn't see it, but maybe people are catching on to his madness. I don't know, but I was sure very surprised to see the final score, 28-23, and Arizona lose. Maybe, again, new system, new coach, all that good stuff, but I guess I hadn't heard that BYU was supposed to be much of a squad this year. Now, they're normally never a joke. They're never a title contender, but they're normally one of
those. Well, they had a bad year last year, too. They had, only won 4 games last year. But years before, they're actually competitive, and they lost a lot of – no matter what, I remember 2 years ago, no matter what, just look at the spread, they were going to go under it. They were going to make it tight or win, but they lost, like, a bunch of nail biters, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, nice win for them. You know, it caught me by surprise, but definitely not probably the way Arizona wanted to start. Meanwhile, Herm Edwards, hey, big first win, you know. I'm sure there will be better media takes and drama from that season, but for his first, you know, first game, his team played well for him.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a big win, but they got someone they could have a big win against this week, Michigan State. Real quick with a stat. The last 12 season openers, right, Arizona, 10 out of the last 12 they've won, right, going into this Saturday's game. The only two losses were in 2007 and 2006. Guess who beat them?
BYU.
BYU. Yep.
Ooh.
That's the third time in 13 years, and that's the only games they've lost to open were all three of them against them. That was pretty crazy. We did have some we talked about Ohio State, Dwayne Haskins taking over and having, you know, big shoes to fill. Now, they weren't playing anybody, but he did throw for 300 yards, 5 touchdowns. That was a good look from him. There's another stat I wanted to talk about. Oh, you know what? I forgot to mention, but Beamer Ball came out. Beamer Ball came out last night, block, punt, touchdown. The 21st block punt touchdown since 1987 under Beamer Ball, Virginia Tech. So I had to bring the Beamer back. You know what I mean? Gotta love the old
I'm assuming
Beamer.
I didn't see this, Chris, but I'm assuming that is the best in the country, or is there some freakish like Miami or Alabama that has the record? I've assumed that's number one since that time.
They didn't say it was number one, so I actually think it's close, though. It's right in that realm. But, yeah, for a while, Miami had that thing going, too, where they had the block punt touchdowns or just special team touchdowns. But, yeah, if you look at block punt, I want to see who beat them. You know what I mean? Like, I'd like to see 21 of them is a lot, even though it dates back quite a bit. That's a lot, man. So I'm not sure. That's a good question. That's a good question. I don't have an answer for you, but it is a good question. It didn't have it didn't say the stat or anything like that, as far as you know, the best thing.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure it is. We're gonna go. Yeah, it is. That's what we're gonna say. We're gonna say, yep, that sure was the best ever. And then there was one other game, that Cal UNC game was pretty good. Cal won 24-17. I remember seeing chunks of that. And the UCLA and Cincinnati. And UCLA, another new offense coming in. Big name coach. Like you said, Kelly, Cincinnati stayed in the game and then overcame them 26-17 on the road. And then obviously. The Old Dominion didn't have a great afternoon traveling. They had a little problem. And, of course, we're talking about the crafty pick of the week. They got housed 52 to 10. Liberty 52-10.
Oh,
if you think you're going to walk in to Liberty Stadium and try to get a W, you might as well just forget it. Just forget about it. You're not getting it. Like I said, that's probably the worst pick I've had out of those crafty crappy. That's what we should call it, crafty crappy pick of the weeks.
Sure.
So we are now in, all of a sudden, here we are, week two. You know what? We do have a ranked versus ranked, another ranked versus ranked, because the new rankings came out. It took them an extra day, I guess, because of the holiday or whatever. But we do have Georgia, number 3 Georgia, visiting South Kakalaka, number 24 South Kakalaka. That's obviously a big game inside the SEC because it's going to count in the conference. And speaking about counting in the conference in a big game, number 17 USC travels to number 10 Stanford. Right now Stanford's sitting at 4.5. A couple other games we talked about, that Penn State on the road at Pitt. I don't know how on the road that is. They usually play that at Steeler Stadium, right? I believe at the Steeler Stadium they usually play that, so it really won't be a road game there. Could be wrong, though, but I'm pretty sure that they do play that there because it's a rivalry game. Michigan State at ASU. Herm, you got your chance to show up. And Kentucky at Florida, 14 points. Right now, right off the bat, I'm thinking Kentucky's going to be able to sneak under that 14-point spread. That's a against the spread little nugget. Why don't we start right at the top, the biggest game of the weekend. Saturday night on Fox, your USC Trojans, number 17th ranked in the country, travel to their nemesis, number 10 Stanford. And when I say nemesis, they have been a nemesis in the last, decade or something like that?
Oh,
anyway,
yeah.
How do you see this shit playing out?
I mean, since it is so fresh in the year and we didn't start off with, like, a high-caliber opponent this year, I'm just scared. I mean, they're always just the opposite of what we do. Like, instead of, like, the high, flashy players, Stanford has, like, the tough guys that just run the ball and kill you. And I mean, my gut tells me they're going to lose because Stanford almost always beats us. I mean, we used to be the unorganized USC that commit a bunch of personal fouls and beat ourselves. But even when we have good teams, Stanford's always a pain to beat. I believe we did smack them around last year. I remember last year we did smoke them, and then we had to scrape by at Texas. But normally, Stanford is just a pain. And they still, you know, got maybe the best running back in college football, so we're going to have to deal with that. Obviously, we don't have Sam Darnold at quarterback. We have a new kid who, I mean, last week they put numbers, but they played a nobody. So I guess, optimistic we have a chance, but without knowing much about teams, just from the history we played in them, Chris, this is going to be a tough game. This is going to be a very tough game, and I hope we find a way to win, because starting the year off with a conference loss and a drop in rankings would suck. But Stanford, man, besides last year, they're almost always having our number.
So no pick on that. Did you hear that, audience? He didn't pick. Week one, week two, and he's already not picking. Son of a gun.
I'll never not pick my boys, but I wouldn't bet them. I'll pick USC. I'll stick with my squad, but I'm nervous. They always play us tight.
Yeah, and you're right. Last year's 42-24, but when the push came to shove later in the season, it was 31-28. Actually, I forgot they played twice last year. I totally forgot about that. Is that true? Did they play in the pack? I forgot that they played twice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, at least, you know, still in a loss, it was only 31-28. But I'm going to go on the other side. I'm going to say, for all the reasons you said that Stanford's, you know, a favorite, I just think they're a little bit more hard-nosed. Obviously – starting out, you know, starting a young, what is he, a redshirt freshman? Is he a redshirt freshman?
Yeah.
I think he's a redshirt.
Yep. Redshirt freshman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think the redshirt freshman might have a little bit of problem. That's what I'm looking for. Not looking towards, but looking forward to. So, yeah, I'm going to go Stanford. I think that it'll be – it's not going to be some kind of blowout. You know, they'll grind it out. It's not like it'll be a walkaway or anything like that. And so, yeah, I think that it'll be somewhat – I don't know, probably like 24-20 or something like that. But yeah, it's early in the season, so you never know. I mean, I'll say this, the last couple of years, Stanford has had a weird September. Now they straighten out and they end up winning a bunch of games. You could even say that about USC too. They got to 11 last year.
Sure.
I mean, that's still damn good. But yeah, I'm going to go with Stanford on that. The other rank versus rank, Georgia at South Kakalaka, at South Carolina. Right now, according to ESPN's Football Power Index, 73.3% that Fromm and company are going to come down there and handle South Kakalaka on their home field in Williams-Brice Stadium, to be exact. Do you agree or disagree? Do you think that Georgia is just going to keep it moving and kind of build off what they did last year?
I think this is a game. And I say that because I heard like almost every college football person I heard this summer said that a lot of people think South Carolina can beat them. Like there's a legit chance of an upset. And South Carolina is one of those teams where they had a pretty damn good year last year and they didn't lose much. And they got that Dabo Samuels back, and that guy's probably one of the most talented overall athletes in college football in the country. So I'm not saying they win, but I think the game's close and they cover. So yeah, I don't care. I'll pick an upset. I'll take South Carolina in the win. I'll go with my first kind of wild upset of the year. But I just think South Carolina is a team that kind of flies under the radar a little bit. They have a good squad. They have a home field advantage. And, yeah, I think that maybe they can maybe catch Georgia early. So I'm expecting a close game, and I'll pick a Gamecocks upset.
Nice. You just wanted an excuse to say Gamecocks. I know you. You're right. They did have a bounce-back year last year. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Under Spurrier, you know, that run that they had where they got to 11 wins a couple times, even got to 12 wins, they kind of fell off. And now it does seem like they've built back. You're right. They do have a fair amount of talent coming back. I think it'll be just a close, grinded-out game, too. I really do. But I see Georgia getting the W. Mississippi State, number 18, Mississippi State, traveling to Kansas State. And now every year we look at these guys and go, you know what? Kansas State is undervalued. You know, are they great? Are they ever going to win a national championship? The answer is no. But they have a knack, their style of play, you know, the hurry up, slow down, you know, the slow motion, I think we called it a couple years back, where it's like,
mm-hmm.
it's just a little bit different type of running quarterback game, a little bit more throwback, really. But you always have veteran players because a lot of them are JUCOs. And that's kind of the lifeline, you know, and we know Kansas actually has a couple of colleges, JUCO colleges, pretty high profile if you look at JUCO colleges around the country. And so he definitely picks them out there. Snyder, of course, 9.5-point favorite are the Bulldogs heading into KU or Kansas State. This is one where I'm looking at the spread and I wish it was about 11 or 12. Because then I would probably pick them to cover. What do you think? You think they'll just keep it tight? Maybe they can fit under that 9.5? Or because this is what I'm looking at for upset of the week right here.
It does seem that K-State always has that one game start of the year, normally versus an SEC team, and they play people tight. So I definitely wouldn't you know, bet Mississippi State. They're always just pesky. K-State, they almost have every game where they normally, like, should win a game and they have to do something stupid and lose it. This is kind of their MO, and they play a different style. You're kind of flying in the middle of nowhere, but, you know, he's always got the guys ready to go. I'd maybe, like, find a team to tease him with and tease the points up, but I would take K-State. They're pesky. I think Mississippi State wins, but they could easily be one of those K-State shanks a field goal to lose the game, or, you know, 17-14 or 17-16 kind of thing. So I'll take Mississippi State, and I'm sure they have much more talent on the field, Chris, but K-State, right, they're just a pain. This is kind of what they do. So I'll take, I guess, Mississippi State win, K-State cover.
Yeah, I was thinking right around that 20-17 or 20-16, something random like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a lot of under-the-radar games. Jimbo, big Jimbo Fisher, as we know, he took the money and ran to Texas A&M. A&M at home, we always know that they have a loud-ass crowd. Clemson travels there. They're 11.5 favorites there. I'm telling you, I think that Kentucky, who was slowly but surely, and I do mean slowly, they're better than you think. Not great. I'm not saying they're going to win the game. This is not my upset of the week, but I think they can lose by less than 14. I actually think Michigan State is going to bounce back this week, and it won't be a game in the fourth quarter against ASU. Right now they're sitting at a 6.5 on the road favorite. And then another one, Penn State and Pitt. Pitt has a knack for knocking off ranked teams. Usually you have to be top three for them to knock you off. Unfortunately,
sure,
that happened to my Canes last year. And as we know, the year before, Clemson won a national championship but got beat by Pitt. Is Michigan State or Penn State going to struggle again this week? Now, I think Pitt's a better opponent than ASU. Both of them are on the road, but like I said, it's not a true road game for Penn State. But major struggles in week one for Penn State and Michigan State. Are they going to be like, all right, dude, let's did it light a fire under their ass? Or you think that the style of play is going to make both these kind of competitive games? How do you see these games? Which one do you think is a better chance for an upset? Pitt beating Penn State, or ASU and Michigan State, or C, A, B, or C? They'll just be business as usual. In the first week, it's just the first week. They're going to put it behind them, and they're going to move on.
I don't think Pitt has much this year, and I know they kind of say that every year, but I think Penn State would have a better chance of moving on. I think they probably got a shock they deserved. Because I would assume that, I mean, people probably think that Utah State's a little better than, you know, Appalachian State, whatever. But I think Penn State bounces back, and I'll pick Herm. Maybe Herm starts things really hot, and he finds a way to beat Michigan State. You know, last year Michigan State was pretty, you know, 2 years ago. No, last. I mean, Michigan State is in a little bit of a funk, you know. I'll take ASU.
2 years
I
ago,
when better.
They had it all, though. Because they won 10 games.
Yeah, and they
last
got those
year.
Guys. They got those guys suspended. You're right. I'll take. I would like the odds of Arizona State doing better at home. Now, is Penn State playing at Pitt?
You know, I want to say that they play that game at, you know, where Pittsburgh plays the Steelers. So I feel like it's a big enough
right.
place where there's going to be plenty of Penn State, you know, presence. So I don't really think it's
right. That
it's a road game, but not really. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
It's not like
I'll take
stadium
ASU.
Up. You know.
Mm-hmm.
You take ASU.
Yeah, I'll take ASU. Who cares? And Sparty, they definitely, you know, they had their moments last week. That Utah State. I mean, well, hell, I remember streaming the television because when in that Penn State game. It was 4th-and-2. It was like their last one of the big 4th-down conversions they had to make to advance the game in regulation.
Yeah.
They're playing man coverage, and then their quarterback falls into a zone. And they just gave him a first down. I saw my dad, like, what are you doing? He's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, well, the DBs are all pressed up, fourth and two. You got to stop quick passing, fall into a zone. And just like it was like a throw in the park. And I was like, oh, play later, touchdown. But I was like, how can you fall back into a zone coverage on fourth and two and you're trying to pull off a massive upset? I'm still a little ticked off about it because, God, I want Penn State to lose. But they got a free pass. After that, you knew in overtime. That's one thing about overtime, Chris. Normally when those top teams start slumping and, you know, an upset happens in overtime, it's normally enough talent to take over. You know, you almost never see the underdog team win once it gets into overtime. You know, once you get there, the home team is probably, okay, well, we got to get our stuff together now and take over. And that happened, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. A couple other hardcore barn burners, meaning, sure, this isn't high-profile teams, but they're probably going to be competitive. Iowa State at Iowa, generally speaking, Marshall, is always a tight game. You know, Iowa State could be like 2 or 3 wins all year, but if they get that big, big win, they're happy. You know, they just have a way of making that a tight game. So if you're, you know, more of the hardcore variety, and if you're listening to the show, my guess is you're a hardcore college football fan. So that's another game to kind of just keep an eye on and say, you know what, that let's see the second half, because that'll probably be a really tight game. And also Cal at BYU. Cal beating North Carolina at home, and BYU getting that big win over Arizona. Big West Coast game in general. Is there any other games that you want to mention or talk about before we get to Duke against Northwestern. That's always the last couple of years, that's been a pretty good game. Those are kind of equal programs, good quality coaches. Keep your eye on that as well.
One thing I'll add is at our college basketball show, I always go on a trip for the first week of March Madness. And one of the guys on my trip is always a huge Oklahoma fan that lives a half an hour away from Norman. And he's always invited me up. So I'm going to the Oklahoma UCLA game this week. So I will have a tailgating report backstory. I see Oklahoma as like a 31-point favorite. So I hope they crush UCLA. I obviously don't cheer for them. So I'll be going to Oklahoma, Sooner Nation, and I will have a detailed report of cheering alcohol consumption and football festivities taken. I've never been to like a big D1 game. I've been to some D2 college football, and I guess I've been to like a Gophers game in the Metrodome versus NDSU, but I've never been to like a huge, like I think Oklahoma sits like 90,000 or 80. So it'll be kind of a fun day. I'll be able to give you some shout outs soon and break it down for you, Chris, when I come back on the show and we do it this following week.
Heck yeah. You're going to have to, you know, check us in on Kyler Murray, who had a good start. He's looking real, fluid out on the field. Let's put it that way. The guy is he's quick. And by the way, Fresno is going to beat my Gophers. The Gophers, Fresno, that's a really tight game. Minnesota at home, only 2.5 points, so it's basically a 50-50 game. That's a 50-50 right there. I actually favor Fresno State. I don't like saying it. I don't like admitting it, but I kind of favor them. I will say this, though. Minnesota last week came out, and for those going, what the hell are you doing breaking down Gopher games? We're based, you know, I'm based in Minnesota, and so was Marshall for a large chunk of his life. But Anikstad is a true walk-on freshman. Okay, he's a true walk-on freshman. There was a redshirt walk-on freshman named Baker Mayfield a couple years back, but there hasn't been a true freshman walk-on, no transfer, no redshirt, just straight up like that. So it's pretty crazy. He was a guy that kind of got some D1s late. Illinois was one of them. He did, you know, he had plenty of small schools after him, but he just didn't get that big, you know, the D1 schools all the way, like the big programs, top 40 or whatever programs. Illinois and a couple other programs started sniffing around late, but he actually is from Minnesota, and he went to an academy in Florida. And it's basically a sports academy where it's like dorms and everything. You live in there and all that. And he had to battle and take over a returning starter, and he did a pretty good job down there from what I understand. So this isn't his first time, but that's kind of why he was under the radar, because he didn't get a ton of playing time right away. So the Minnesota boy went to Florida for high school, you know, I think just 1 year, maybe 2 years, but then came back, and now he is leading the Gophers to a win. They came out real slow, but in the second quarter, I think it was 31-0 or something like that. So they looked pretty good. You could see we got a little bit more speed, got a little bit more size. P.J. Fleck is trying to build up these Gophers to be quote-unquote elite. We will see how that goes. But as far as, you know, week one, pretty damn good for the Gophers quarterback. I believe it's the crafty, crappy pick of the week time. What do you think? You got anything else that you want to talk about before that?
Well, I'll just slowly fill my quota, and I am going up to Oklahoma. And Oklahoma is a place where yesterday or last week Lane Kiffin went and left with massive embarrassment.
Thought we got out of this one, because you already talked about Oklahoma too. Well played, sir.
They were down 28-0 before you could like snap your fingers. Kiffin got smacked in the mouth. Now clearly they had a great year last year, but there is still a skill differential of FAU and Oklahoma. So tough loss for my guy. They are 0-1.
Did he put his hands up at all before he made a, like, before the play was snapped? Did he put his hands up at all, like in celebration, or no?
I think that kind of goes out the window when you're
once you left Alabama,
you're getting about 50 or 60 drop down. I think the hands up celebration is when you're winning a close game or a big play. I don't think you're throwing up many fist pumps when you're down 28-0 early. So tough day.
So that only comes when he's a coordinator, not a head coach. Gotcha. I'll mark that down.
Oh, he did it last year. He gladly did. I remember doing it last year, but that just means his biceps and triceps are ready to be used this week. Now,
all right, let's not get into muscle stuff now. I mean, Jesus.
For once, there's really not a awful matchup with with a reasonable point spread. So I'm kind of settling a little now. In theory, though, if we were to keep track of all of our times we've done the crappy pick of the week, this team has been used consistently. So I feel that there's, you know, some, maybe you'll have some flashbacks in your mind of
the Raging
Cajuns. No,
yeah.
No.
Oh, well, no, it's not the Raging Cajuns. Okay.
That is.
But you're right. They
team.
Have
that
been.
Is the. That is a team we've adopted. We will play their fight song when they win a game this year. We'll mix up a little bit. By Raging Cajuns, that's our adopted squad. Chris and I have always picked. But I would say an interstate rival, the UL Monroe Warhawks, are traveling to Southern Mississippi Golden Eagles. Now, obviously, Southern Miss has only been respectable, and UL Monroe is normally a 6-1 team. So we're not bottom of the barrel this week, but it's a pretty good matchup. For once, the home team is favored. This game is at 6 o'clock Central Time. I think Southern Miss would probably be in the Eastern Times, I'm not sure. And they're hosting the UL Monroe Warhawks. Now, the Warhawks have a pretty sweet, cool name, but Golden Eagle is also pretty cool, too. So, Chris, what is your breakdown of the 5.5-point road underdogs going to the Golden Eagles' nest, I doubt that's the name of the stadium, to match up and battle out a game this Saturday?
Well, it's M.M. Roberts Stadium, as we all know. They're in southern Mississippi. 46 tickets left for running as low as $15 at Vivid Seats, just to head it up.
Ooh.
We always like to give a
Ooh.
Shout-out to Vivid Seats. Good place to get boxing tickets. But anyway, okay, let me see here. Let me break this down a little bit. You know, coming off a nice little W, Southern Miss is coming out. They won last week 55-7. And
Ooh.
Louisiana they play Selma? Who would they play? I forgot who this. Who is that? 34-31. I don't know who the hell they played.
Isn't that isn't that the historical city Selma, where like you know
yeah,
bodies were made
in Georgia? Yep.
Jesus.
Yeah, I
don't
know.
Didn't know
sure.
they had a team.
Yeah, I that's the only thing I can guess. You know, Oh, this is tough because I have picked ULM. I really have. I definitely have.
You're a common theme.
Mm-hmm. I know, and that Warhawks, that you're right. This is a common garbage team. I'm going the home squad though. I'm getting a little, you know, I guess last week kind of made me a little shaky from that blowout, a favorite blowout. Somehow they just got their ass whooped. But if there's only 46 tickets left on Vivid Seats, that's probably about 200, 300, 400 left overall. So what I'm saying is MM Roberts Stadium, and just judging by the picture, it's going to be rocking. I mean, that pub, this is on ESPN3. And it's in Hattiesburg,
ooh,
Mississippi. Oh, shit.
Oh, boy.
It's in Hattiesburg. Yep. I forgot. This is where Favre went. Yeah, I'm going Brett Favre. I got Brett Favre winning the game. Yep, Brett Favre and his squad, the Southern Mississippi Warhawks. Oh, no, it's not the Warhawks. I'm sorry. That's the UL.
Golden Eagles.
I'll just shut up, and I got Brett Favre's old college team, Southern Miss. That's who I'm going with. Not Old Miss, not North Miss, not Mississippi State. Nope. It's more country than that. We're going Southern Miss in Favre for the crappy.
I do remember.
Week of the week.
I think this would have been like 2012 college football game. I did once have a dynasty with Southern Miss because I thought that they had like the sick black and gold jersey. They always had good linebackers. So I think Fred played like a season of Southern Miss dynasty football. In one of our fun years of doing this show, they bring back the college football video game. I'm not a huge video game person, but I did spend hours of my life just playing dynasties in college football because I thought a video game was sweet. I know everyone loves Madden, but I hope one day they figure out the rights and bring back college football.
Yeah, I agree.
Those games
were awesome. You could recruit. It was dope.
Yep.
I really love that game, too. I don't even like video games much, but I love that game.
Yeah, I spent, God, how many hours playing that game? I had so many dynasties, and you get to recruit players and you get the mascots and you get to pump up the crowd. When you're, I mean, yeah, it's a sweet game. So
really
I guess to wrap up on a good note, Chris and I will be back next week. I will have a Norman, Oklahoma report. I'll tell you this, my other goal this year, brother, is I want to go to an SEC game. Unfortunately, the week I get off in October for school, because it's like a fair day, there's not really any great matchups. Mississippi State does play Auburn, but I've been looking, and that it's like an 8-hour drive, which I want to do, and that I guess there's not many damn airports in Mississippi. But I might, so I'm going to OU, and I want to try to go to an SEC game this year, just to kind of, I think it'd be fun to kind of break that down. I've never been to one. The other option is LSU, but it's to be LSU Bama and stuff like that, or LSU Georgia, and those tickets are going to be out the roof. But that's the plan. I want to report back from an SEC game. But anyways, whether I go to games or not, Chris and I will be back every week. I don't believe there's any games on this Saturday or Sunday, or Sunday or Monday, because that's time for NFL season. So if you're a football fan, your fix is coming. You get college football, you get NFL, you get NFL Thursday, and then Saturday or Sunday, Monday, and it's football weekend. So we're good to go. As he said, there's not a whole lot of matchups of teams that are ranked versus each other, but we say that so many times on our show, and then we come back with an incredible week to break down. So even though we don't have a top 10 intermatchup like Washington-Auburn this past week, that does mean we can't have a bunch of incredible football. So thank you for always listening to the show. We truly appreciate it. We're off to another good start to a college football year. As always, we'll always try to do a podcast on Monday. Occasionally that changes due to scheduling and life, but for the most part, we will have a show Monday, at least Tuesday, and we will break down just a lot more college football. This week should be fun. Conference play is not far away. And as always, have a safe week. Enjoy, I don't know. Just enjoy the nice weather. We have no drama to talk about. Something that wraps the show up now on a positive note. We'll be back. The boys are out. Peace.